Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering, and this week I'm joined in the studio by Seamus McGrath, Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South Central, Jed Nash, Labour Party Chair and TD for Louth. Louise Byrne is with us, political correspondent with the Irish Mirror, and Sarah Carey, columnist with the Irish Independent, and you're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. So we'll start with this diplomatic disagreement, let's call it that. It has been brewing in the last 24 hours between Ireland and the US. Simon Harris appears to have directly contradicted the US account of this phone call between himself and Marco Rubio, the US Secretary of State. It happened on Tuesday. The US spokesperson said the call addressed the US-Ireland trade agreement and trade imbalance, but the Taoiseach has disputed that. Seamus, I'll come to you first, because the Mail, the Irish Daily Mail, says that Fianna Fáil ministers are furious with the Taoiseach for picking a fight before the St Patrick's Day visit. Has Simon Harris made the Taoiseach's job even harder here, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so, Claire. I mean, I think this is not a major issue, to be perfectly frank. I've absolutely no doubt our Taoiseach will represent us well in Washington next week. I don't think this will be a significant issue as part of that trip. We all know the significant relations between Ireland and the US. It's vital that we go there. It's vital that we maintain the tradition of visiting the White House on St. Patrick's Day. There are serious substantive issues to discuss. Obviously, trade policy between Ireland and the US, and indeed between Europe and the US, but also issues around the Middle East and Ukraine and so on. So these will be the issues that will dominate the discussion.
But James, at a very basic level, like, don't be contradicting them before you get there.
Yes, of course. And I'm not sure there was a clear contradiction.
Well, there is. No, there definitely is, because they said that the trade imbalance was brought up. And Simon Harris says, I didn't bring up the trade imbalance. I brought up the importance of the transatlantic relationship. So there's a difference between what they said happened in the call and what we said happened in the call.
Yeah, and look, this issue will be cleared up, I've no doubt. But it isn't a very substantive issue to the significant issues that need to be discussed next week. And our Taoiseach has been quite clear that he will raise very significant issues around Ukraine, around the Middle East, and of course around ongoing trade policy between America and Ireland. And that's the most important thing here. As we know, there are over 50,000 people in Ireland employed in the sector of pharma and life sciences alone in Ireland. We have to maintain good, you know, healthy economic relations. The idea of tariffs will be very damaging, and that's something we need to discuss clearly. You know, they only depress economic growth, deflate economic expectations, and are damaging from a whole point of view. So these are the kind of substantive issues that need to be discussed next week. And sideshows around who said what and so on, I don't think that's going to be part of it.
Okay, so you think it's a sideshow. Louise Byrne, you're going to be with the press corps heading over for that trip next week. I mean, clearly the trade imbalance is on their radar. You know, whether it was discussed or not, it is there, it is front of mind. They put it in the readout of that call.
Absolutely, and it has been on their radar for months. This has been spoken about for months. And when Howard Lutnick was, you know, appointed by Donald Trump, people were bringing up old clips of him speaking about the trade imbalance before he was even in the frame for that job, some might say. So there are concerns about how it might come up. I mean, I've been speaking to government TDs, and they kind of are half joking, saying, oh, you know, when the journalists are in the Oval Office now, they really shouldn't be asking about the trade imbalance. Like, let that go. Like, don't ask about that. Don't ask about Israel. Don't ask about the Occupied Territories Bill. Kind of half joking, but at the same time, very serious, because there are concerns about what is going to happen in the Oval Office on Wednesday. We've seen what has happened President Zelensky last week. Now, I don't think anything will happen on that scale. I think everyone's hoping nothing will happen on that scale. But as I think it was Jennifer Whitmore said during the week on the plinth in Leinster House from the Social Democrats, how Wednesday goes depends on what side of the bed Donald Trump wakes up on, what he has for breakfast. It is going to be a very volatile situation. And I mean, those comments from Simon Harris yesterday, I was speaking to some government TDs and they were saying, well, look, it was a double-edged sword. You can't, you know, let them, if it wasn't true, you have to say it's not true. There has to be some level of accuracy and some level of fact checking. But at the same time, you have to do that in a way that doesn't annoy them either. And we've seen that with Keir Starmer when he was in the White House. We saw with Emmanuel Macron. And that's the balance that Micheál Martin is going to have to kind of try and find on Wednesday. How you flatter him in some sense, because that's what Donald Trump likes, but you can't, you know, be pandering to him. But you also have to hold him to account and fact check him in real time, as we've seen. So it's going to be a tough balance.
Sarah, what do you think? Should Simon Harris just have not said anything and not reacted?
he should have kicked a touch. I think he did handle it poorly. Trade was clearly discussed, was mentioned. Who mentioned it first? What the degree of emphasis was? What the significance of it was? I don't know. We weren't there. But I wouldn't have contradicted Rubio so starkly a few days before our Taoiseach is going.
You think it might be an issue for Micheál Martin?
Look, maybe it'll have all blown over by then. But it shows that every single word that we say is being noted and we have to be careful. And by the way, that includes our president, Michael D. Higgins, who has said very unhelpful things too. Everybody needs to watch every single word they say. So, and I think everybody wants Micheál Martin to go in there and get out, you know, without making the situation worse. And I really do think most people in this country
want to do it well. We're a democratic republic. I mean, do we really have to behave like this and bend the knee and say that we agree with things that we... many of us fundamentally
don't. We don't have to do that. And you know, I'm kind of using language like that, Bendini, and I know we're all talking about that. And there are great moral principles at stake here. Like, it is a high stakes game. But we don't live in the neighbourhoods that other people are living in. You know, Ireland is the beneficiary of the great post-World War II NATO paid for peace. Our economic model depends on what other people paid for and fought for. And I do think there is a space where we can, with dignity, find common ground with Trump. He's all in this space where he's a peacemaker. We can say we support your efforts for peace. But any idea that people have that we should go in there and lecture the United States, you know, when they are paying, you know, for the weapons in Ukraine, when they have been doing that, I do think a little bit of humility is called for. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a space where we can make a statement, but we do not poke the bear. And anyone who says we should poke the bear, let them please tell me what budget cuts they're going to make in 5 years' time if we start losing billions in corporation tax. Mm-hmm. So people who go in and say we need to take him on and be confrontational about Gaza and Ukraine also need to explain what consequences and what costs they're prepared Ireland should make for that.
Okay, well, Jed Nash, do you think that Micheál should go in and poke the bear?
No, and I don't think he will. And I don't think necessarily that any Irish Taoiseach should do. This is, we're in existential territory here. Eloise is right. I mean, the Taoiseach has to find that balance between putting the interests of Ireland, our economy and our society and our values first, without, though, appearing to be in any way obsequious, because our values are about freedom, about free trade, about liberal democracy. And we know that the actions, of course, of Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican counterparts don't square with that reality. There's huge diplomatic efforts going on at the moment, I know. And isn't it incredible that he just announced yesterday that it's going to be Irish-American Heritage Month? I'd imagine that our embassy, run by Geraldine Byrne-Nason, a good draw to woman, was probably behind that. So I think that was an expert diplomatic
move. But you do expect Micheál Martin to go in and make strong points about Ireland's position on Gaza and Ireland's position on Ukraine. You're saying that he should still do be careful?
I would hope that he would, and that he would find the right tone. I think there is an obligation, Micheál Martin himself and Ireland, even though there are some people who feel that Ireland isn't even strong enough on Gaza. If we look at it comparatively in terms of our European counterparts, we have a strong cross-party, bipartisan approach to Gaza, to two-state solution to the genocide that's been carried out.
But if I go back to what you said at the beginning, we're in existential territory here. But why run the risk if it is as serious as you say? Why run the risk of causing him to get angry and turn his ire on Ireland? We know what's at stake here.
No, I think the focus actually of this entire engagement will inevitably be around trade. Yeah. And remember, Donald Trump is a transactional individual and a transactional politician. And for him, it's all about the narrative. It's about the story. OK, so I think that initiative yesterday, signing that document, that
the Heritage Month
is actually quite significant, I would imagine. He has said himself, he's put it on the public record, that he believes, and I don't know what the numbers are, that a significant number of people with Irish-American heritage actually vote for him. I don't think he'll necessarily want to poke them. The transactional guy that he is, there will be business leaders in the US speaking to him saying, listen, there is a mutually beneficial trade arrangement between Ireland and the US. The issue is, and Scott Lucas, I think, touched on it earlier on in the contribution earlier on in the programme, what Donald Trump understands is goods, not services, stuff. Yeah. Okay, real things. He doesn't understand services. If you actually look at the,
but he understands
trade, the balance of trade. You know? If you look at the balance of trade, actually, there is a trade deficit when you include services. Yeah. So that's the kind of conversation that needs to be had. We all know that Ireland is the sixth biggest FDI investor in the US. Hundreds of thousands of US jobs, good US jobs, have been supported by US firms. So it's a mutually beneficial.
Yeah, but we're making the point earlier on in the week. We say we're the sixth largest investor in the United States. Canada's the second, and look what he did to them. You know, Seamus, I want to ask you about something else. The Occupied Territories Bill. Should Micheál Martin raise that? He's likely to be asked about it by journalists in the room. Are you concerned about the impact that might have?
Yeah, I think that will probably come up as part of the discussion around the Middle East. And look, Micheál has been quite clear on that in terms of the government is trying to progress that. But we have received significant legal advice. And obviously, the government has to be responsible in what it does. And anything it brings forward has to be sound from a legal perspective. But it probably will come up as part of the overall discussion around Gaza and the Middle East. And look, I think it is correct that Micheál would raise those issues with the president. I think he's a very experienced international politician. I've no doubt he will set the right tone. I've no doubt he will do it in a way that doesn't poke the bear, to use that phrase. And similarly, in relation to Ukraine-Russia issue, you know, Micheál is extremely experienced in international matters. And it is important that we, you know, we have the strength of character and we have the courage to raise these issues. You do it in a respectful manner and you do it in a way that respects both views.
You just can't predict how he's going to react.
There is criticism in this country in terms of the trip. I absolutely will defend the trip 100%. It needs to happen.
Okay.
But we also need to express our views.
That Occupied Territories Bill, that's a really dangerous piece of legislation, principally because it's about trade. So it's saying that we should not trade, you know, with companies who are manufacturing products in the Occupied Territories. Trade is an EU competency. So that's when Seamus is talking about, you know, legal difficulties. We actually don't have the power to decide who we will and won't trade with. That's for the EU. I think we should drop that, and no way should it be brought up in the Oval Office.
But he's going to be asked about it. You know, when the journalists are there, it's likely to come up. Louise
will
probably...
I'm absolutely bringing it up because, I mean, but these are the kind of things, and like, it's what I mentioned, the half joking, the TDs kind of saying, you know, you can't ask this, you can't ask this. Like, we're there to do our jobs. It's more important, I think, this year than ever that we try and we get questions to President Trump. There is so much going on in the world, and if he's willing to answer the questions, we have to ask them. And, you know, there is a certain amount of responsibility that comes with that. But something like the Occupied Territories Bill, we have seen during the election, it's split opinions, but it is something that people care about. And given that relationship that America has with Israel, something like the Occupied Territories Bill being enacted is a risk to Ireland. And whether they progress with that or not, we'll have to wait and see. But those kind of questions, they have to be asked.
Sarah, they have to be asked.
I know they have to be asked. And I don't want to tell Louise how to do her job. But I'm a Green Jersey girl. If I was there, I would not be stirring things up like that. And I respect your willingness and your right to do it, absolutely, Louise. And I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. But I know that I would be going into that room absolutely terrified of something going wrong that could damage everyone in this country.
Oh, yeah. And I think there is a certain amount of apprehension amongst everyone going. I can't imagine how people are feeling in government buildings at the moment. And I'd question if the Taoiseach is nervous about it, because I think everyone else is. The journalists, I think the rest of the country are quite nervous about it as well. But, you know, but it's like I said, you have to reach that balance. You cannot be seen pandering to him. And I think if the Irish public, if Micheál Martin goes in there on Wednesday and he doesn't, you know, if he's not firm, if he's not straight, if he's not, like I said, like Emmanuel Macron and Keir Starmer really set the tone for this last week, the Irish public won't thank him for pandering to Donald Trump.
Louise,
and the journalists are certainly not going to stand for it either.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And I wrote about this last week in the Indo, and I was talking about how Macron, I thought, got the tone perfectly. He managed to be elegant, graceful, no matter how rude Trump was. He didn't take offence when Trump was saying things that were completely wrong. He very charmingly corrected him, put the hand on the arm, stuff like that. You can do it. You can correct him. You can state your case, but you just need a maturity and a sensitivity and an elegance about how you do it. So, and I think actually Micheál Martin does have that capability, and I think he will manage it.
Actually, the choreography of this is really important, and we were kind of speaking offline earlier on, the four of us informally, just about how all of this is approached. The first major event of the day, of course, is the Vice President's breakfast. So that will be hosted by JD Vance. That's more of a set piece arrangement where people will be making, essentially reading into the record, prepared scripts. They will be proofed to an inch of their lives, I would imagine, before they're actually delivered. So the possibility of any accidents occurring there, I think, would be minimised. That should set the tone and the framework for the day. That's really important. You know, this is a huge diplomatic effort. So it's not only about the Trump meeting, but the Trump meeting itself is absolutely, of course, pivotal. Mm-hmm. And we'll all be watching with bated breath, hoping that the country is represented well, that the country comes out of this relatively unscathed. Mm-hmm. Isn't it extraordinary, actually, that we're talking about this, trying to, you know, handle this as delicately as we can? This is kind of the Ming vase across the slippy floor, isn't it? It really is. It's one of those kinds of challenges.
But also because he's the next EU leader after Macron.
Well, and here's
going
the thing,
in and tariffs, of course, on the agenda too.
Micheál Martin will be viewed as the European Union's representative on the 12th of March in a key meeting with the President of the United States at a very, very difficult time in terms of tariffs and so on. And we just don't know what Trump is going to do on tariffs. So there'll be a lot of tea leaf reading, I think, going on to see, look, you know, is he bringing a message from Brussels in relation to what Europe could wear? We all know as well, of course, I mean, Trump used the threat of tariffs as a negotiating tactic. Remember, you know, we can't take anything he says at face value. Look what he did with Mexico. I mean, he's been announcing this and re-announcing this for weeks. Then a couple of days ago, he pauses it in the hope that he might actually get a concession on something else.
He specifically mentioned the Apple case when Keir Starmer was over. And I think we can legitimately say, if he brings up the Apple case, well, we were on Apple's side in that. Brussels made us take that money. Remember, the Irish government fought the EU on that. An interesting thing, though, on, you're right about how we're the next EU country, but also when he was with Keir Starmer, he was saying, oh, I love that part of the world. I've got all my golf courses there. And he mentioned Doombeg in the context of his Scottish golf courses. So I think perhaps in his head, we're not as European as, you know, legally we are, and we might be able to play that game.
I think you may even see us in the Anglosphere.
Seamus, you want to come in there?
Whether we like it or not. Yeah.
I don't think there'll be any major surprises, to be quite frank. I think the three core topics will be trade and the huge significance of that from a US-EU point of view. We all know the implications of any tariffs there, what they would have. So I think that will be a core part of the discussion. But then the Middle East obviously will be a key part, and Ukraine-Russia issue. And will be the three main themes. But let's be honest there. I mean, both administrations are well aware of each other's views on these things. They have studied our forum. We have studied their forum. So like, there won't be any major surprises. What it comes down to on the day is personal interactions, mm-hmm. you know, personal engagement, the tone.
And there could be a lot of surprises there. I mean,
We have an unpredictable US president in one sense. He has a very individual style. But look, I have no doubt our Taoiseach will be able to manage that situation.
And is he going really in as a representative of the EU? Is that how he views it and the EU views it? And is that right and fair?
Well, I think that's a fair assumption. I mean, we are, you know, a key member of the EU. The presidency obviously is coming up. There's no question about that. I mean, he's not just speaking for Ireland, we're speaking for the EU. And the whole issue of trade and trade policy and tariffs, I mean, that has to be a core part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't really touched on that yet, but the implications of any tariffs would be enormous. And
we are told, every time we bring it up here on the programme, when we've government representatives, we're told we're working on that, we're working on a plan. Well, what is the plan?
Well, obviously, we are working on that. I know the Minister of Public Expenditure, Jack Chambers, spoke on this yesterday. There is contingency planning going on. There are scenarios being teased out in terms of what potential issues there could be. But look,
an EU competency, though, isn't it? I mean, is there much we can do individually to push back?
Yes, of course, it is an EU-wide issue, and we will work with our EU partners on that and our trade commissioner from the EU. So it is, of course, we can't do anything unilaterally on that.
But we do
need to use, I suppose, what I would say is a bit of a soft spot that Trump would have for Ireland. I think that gives us an opportunity, and St. Patrick's period presents us with that opportunity. And let's be honest, we are the envy of the world in terms of the access we get during that period, and we need to use that and use it properly. But that doesn't mean we have to go over there and agree with everything. We state our facts on certain issues. We can respectfully disagree and make our arguments, and I have no doubt that that will be done correctly and properly.
Sarah?
So we have to abide by the EU in terms of trade negotiations, but Trump doesn't. So he can pick off individual countries. So he can say, Irish goods coming into ports, I'm putting a tariff on those. We have to bear that in mind. Just throwing that in there, okay.
When we were I think it is important that we work with the EU on this issue, you know. Yeah.
Oh, well, we have to.
We don't want any unilateral situations to arise here. Ultimately, we are a key part of the EU. That is our strength, and we need to work from that.
When I was talking to Peter Burke on the programme, the Minister for Enterprise, during the week, he's in favour of negotiation before they put the big bazooka of retaliatory tariffs on the table. But we won't have that choice, will we? We won't have the ability to say, let's hold off retaliating here, let's negotiate with them. That decision will be made at EU level, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, but look, we are influential in EU matters as well. And I would agree with Minister Burke on that. We have to try and figure out how this can be handled in the safest way possible. And, you know, I think dial it down a little bit and not be talking about retaliatory tactics. I mean, tariffs will have huge negative implications for trade. You know, we just need to avoid that scenario. And look, it is welcome that Trump has stepped back from the Canadian and the Mexican tariffs in recent days. He has paused that. And that's the second time, to the best of my knowledge. So look, hopefully diplomatic efforts behind the scenes will work.
But it's still destabilising.
Trade is an EU competence, but obviously Ireland is especially exposed because of our kind of excessive reliance on good foreign direct investment jobs, the US, not only in terms of corporation tax, by the way, but decent jobs and income tax as well is very much dependent on those jobs. So we're particularly exposed. I mean, my colleague, party leader, Labour Party leader, Ivana Bacic, requested engagement actually with Tánaiste last week for all party leaders to get a sense, at least. Nobody expects anybody to show their hand in what may be a very sensitive period of negotiations, but to get a sense of the scenario planning that's going on, because you used the term earlier on, Sarah, green jersey. We are in kind of green jersey territory. I mean, the kind of engagement.
Was she granted the
Brexit
meeting?
For example,
was she granted the meeting?
No, she hasn't heard anything from what I understand.
He said
understand
he'd be in favour of it. From, he said he thought he'd be in
absolutely
favour.
Simon's in favour of lots of things, but and then nothing, and that concerns me. I engaged the Minister for Public Spending and the Minister for Finance on the question of our preparedness on oral questions 2 weeks ago, and what I got back was essentially a non-answer, okay, which leaves me concerned. Now, I don't accept that there isn't a degree of scenario planning taking place. We can't be certain about what's going to happen.
But you can see that they're not going to show you. They're not going to show you their hand, right?
No, and nobody expects that. I'm a realist and have some experience of negotiations. That's not what you do. But to get a sense, because this is so existential for the state, for our economy and our society, that there needs to be a kind of bipartisan approach to this, insofar as it can be, in the way that we approached Brexit. That's the kind of approach that needs to. I don't want to elevate to Brexit levels at this point in time. And I mean, I know, well, that's the government line as well.
It could be far worse than that, is the reality of it.
To be honest, I mean, if the kind of collapse in a worst case scenario arises, nobody wants to see that happen. It could make 2008 to 2011 look.
I don't believe that happened, by the way.
Okay, yeah. I don't want to exaggerate it either. Because
actually,
there are pharma companies and IT
and
firms,
you know,
and so on who have a huge stake in
this. But you're right to say that this could be hugely impactful.
Good staff, highly trained, and a platform.
Seamus, you wanted to come in there when Jed was saying he'd like engagement from the government on what the plan is. Do you think he's wrong to expect that engagement?
Well, I don't think he's wrong, but it is a very fine line. And as we said earlier, every word is watched and every word is scrutinised. And, you know, rest assured,
you wouldn't trust the Labour Party with these details.
Well, it becomes public knowledge and that gets picked up internationally. Obviously, there is contingency planning taking place. Absolutely. We, as a government, we are acting responsibly.
You're just
that.
Not going to tell but anybody
do,
what it is.
But it is important to repeat the point. We will be doing it in alignment with our European partners. So look, every word is watched here and we just need to be careful. But from an opposition point of view, rest assured, there is clear scenario planning going on.
Listen, I'm watching the clock and I just want to come to the triple lock, because it was the other big story when Simon Harris brought this to Cabinet this week. It looks as though the triple lock and that element of it is going to be removed, meaning it will be easier for Ireland to deploy our forces overseas. Are you concerned about that, Jed, or do you think that the context has changed so it's the right time to do it?
I'm both. The context has changed and I am concerned about that. And I think people are concerned because the Irish people, I think, have a connection with neutrality. There's no doubt that the world has changed. The world has moved on. Over the space of the last few weeks, even, things have changed dramatically in a way they haven't in the last 20 years. I've been making this point as well over the last while. And my uncle peer group, if I accept I'm approaching middle age now, if I manage to live for the next 40 years or so, 40 or 50 years, let's hope so, that part of my life would be very, and our lives would be very different from the part that went previously. We're in very, very uncertain territory. What hasn't been explained to us, if And we're being conditioned now to expect that the triple lock will be gone. The numbers are there. There's a dull majority for it if everybody on the government side votes for this. What happens next? Yes, we
What's
do.
Your fear?
Okay.
Kev, my fear,
It hasn't. And I'm a realist about the world and I understand what is going to happen over the next few years. Nobody has painted a picture of what kind of potential multilateral...
It's easy. It's really easy.
What kind of multilateral engagement Irish peacekeepers
would have. Once she's her hand up, once Sarah go.
So, here's the thing, right?
Obviously, really quickly,
at the moment
of
the triple lock, we require UN approval. Okay, what happens then after that if we remove that? Are we talking about European Union approval?
I'll tell you what
kind of multilateral engagement are we talking about?
What the triple lock means that if we want to engage in peacekeeping or peace informants, Vladimir Putin gets to say no. He has a veto on the UN Security Council. It does not affect our neutrality if we move it. It means we take our neutrality back. The Irish people get to decide what they want to do. And I think the tone of this debate is really, really important. And I particularly wanted to say today, Tom Clonan had a real go at Fergus Finlay in a very unfair and, you know, mean way on RTE radio the other evening, talking about, you know, people being, you know, hauled off to war. And
well, Fergus Finlay's well able to defend himself and he was there and present.
I voted for Tom Clonan and I don't think that kind of behaviour is on. And I think when we do discuss this issue of the triple lock, we have to not be emotive and we have to be rational.
That's what I'm saying. So
and
we
all
need
removing
asked,
the triple lock does
we need
is
government
give
to explain
Ireland
and I'm open for this debate, okay? But we haven't actually had a debate because it's a binary question now. We haven't been told.
Well, you have
what
a government TD sitting beside you, so we'll let Seamus respond to those questions.
We as a sovereign nation should have the right to deploy our troops in peacekeeping scenarios and humanitarian scenarios and crisis management scenarios
without having
a mandate from the United Nations Security Council, from each member of the Permanent Security Council, including Russia, that they would have a veto over our own decision to deploy troops. That's not sustainable. You know, we're living in a different world now. The post-World War II norms have changed in recent years and we have to be prepared to step up as a nation. This has nothing to do with military neutrality, absolutely not. And I think we need to be careful about what happens next type of discussion. This is about the triple lock.
We need to be cautious.
It's about us having an independent decision-making power to deploy our troops, and we are very proud of our troops and very proud of the record they've played since the 1950s in peacekeeping across the world, and that is what this is about. So I think we need to be very
proud
careful
to
about
invest
this.
In our defence forces. I mean, we in Labour, you know, we are a party that's proudly served in government. We're proud of the role that we played in founding the state. Series of government,
right,
opposition,
listen,
the whole lot, defending
their
democratic values. So we need to understand why
the government is here about increasing defence.
You know, you can keep chatting amongst yourselves there now, but I have to go. Thank you so much for being with us.